Welcome to the Supercoach Champions podcast with your hosts, Wilfred Z, Joe Fitz, and other Supercoach champions.
Welcome back to the Supercoach Champions podcast. It's Catfish here again with the second episode of round six. Kickoff's not too far away this evening. So, yeah, I'm going to smash through this nice and quickly. Yeah, apologies again for the late uploads. School holidays causing havoc as always. But, hey, we will be back to normal soon rather than later. Anyway, we're going to have the usual chat here. So, crunching some numbers, captaincy, strategy. Let's dive straight into it, eh?
Let me clue you in. We need a numbers guy. Get Wilfred.
All right, thanks as always to our good friend Carl McGrath Accountant for sponsoring the segment Crunching the Numbers. If you want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, make sure you get Carl to help you out. This week, I'm going to go back to my roots, my base, my foundation, as you might call it. You know, you guys know I like talking about base and base attack, but this time I'm going to look at it more from the angle of, you know, who are the guys who are more efficient and more effective with their opportunities. Now, what I'm not going to do is focus too much on, you know, those short minute, 20, 30 minute guys who are, yeah, they can get through a heap of work because they're only going to be on the field for like maybe one or two stints max, and each stint's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes at a go. So, you know, there's a place for those guys, obviously, especially like our cheapy options. So a quick nod, I suppose, to the two main cheapies at front row forward that most people are looking at. So Liam Henry, look, he's played five games, but I'm just going to take out that last game. I mean, 7 minutes, three tackles, negative four in penalties. It's not worth looking into. So I'm going to look at the other four games. So in those four games, he averaged roughly 36 minutes per game. And I'm looking at his base and base attacks. So basically, he scored 178 points in base and base attack across those four games. So that's roughly 44.5 points per game in his 36 minutes per game. That is elite. It's great. And a lot of people do drop off as the game time increases, but he's shown an ability to keep that going for pretty much his whole time on field. So, yeah, quick shout out to Liam Henry there. The other guy, obviously, a lot of us have, or at least started with, was Sam Hughes. So he has played five games. Now, he's not gotten on the field as much, but I guess we all know his opportunities are definitely increasing now. I mean, from his five games, he's averaged about 25 minutes. So that's really not much game time. But in those 25 minutes, he is getting through some good work. So, you know, 28.8 points per game in base and base attack per minute. So if he's going to increase his game time by 30, you know, sorry, not 30 minutes, by up to, you know, extra 10 minutes or so, let's say he gets up to 35 minutes per game, then if he's going to be able to maintain that points per minute that he's scoring at in terms of his base and base attack, so I'm ignoring basically the, you know, the try with the line break he scored last round. So that's obviously great for his cash generation, but it's more about his opportunity. If he does go out from his 25 minutes a game to 35 minutes a game, he could be hitting an average of 40 just from his base and base attack. So I think that's the key thing I'm looking at here. You know, we're all hoping he gets the start to make some more cash there. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of an interesting look given the, you know, the fact that Max King's out this week, possibly next week, who knows? There's a few moving parts there. So yeah, shout out to those GPs getting it done for us. Yeah, thanks for your contribution so far. The other guys I really want to focus on is obviously the likes of Terrell Mays. And yeah, a few interesting names here. So look, I did mention Max King. I do want to shout him out a little bit. The guy has been, you know, he was okay the first few rounds, but then since then he's exploded. Really upped that work rate, which has been really impressive. So despite the fractured hand, he's hitting 58.4 points per game in base and base attack. And he's scoring that from an average of 49 points per game. So that is just great areas. You know, between 1.15 to 1.2 points per game in base and base attack is elite. That's really, really good stuff. So, yeah, shout out to Max King. Pity that the fractured hand. So hopefully it doesn't impact you too much. Terrell Mays probably are the big name here. So, look, I'm not going to write off that fifth game because, you know, he did play it, obviously, and it's not his fault that his minutes were held to just 20, and we don't know why that was exactly. I mean, you could point to the rotations they had to shuffle around because of interchanges that were forced to be used for, like, you know, Tedesco and Sam Walker and guys like that. And they don't get to replace them because it wasn't, you know, an act of foul play or anything like that. So they did have to actually burn an interchange. So that might have left Terrell May unable to come back on for a second stint. It's easy to say that should have been what happened, but we just don't know for certain because we don't have that inside access. But even including that fifth game, I mean, he's still averaging roughly 47, 48 minutes per game. And yeah, very impressive. Base and base attack work rate of 54.6. So, you know, he's in that 1.15 to 1.2 range in terms of base and base attack. But I guess just for context, I did, you know, let's remove that fifth game. He averages 54.5 minutes per game and he's hitting 63 in base and base attack. So absolutely elite numbers, really, really good to see. It's just really hard to maintain that PPM across that many minutes. So yeah, I think Terrell May, assuming he's going to go back to his normal minutes, he's still, I think, a hold. I wouldn't be offloading him anytime soon, especially when they do have a pretty nice buy schedule. So he's a guy I'm going to happily hold for at least the buy period, if not potentially all season. Like, if he's going to maintain, you know, that 50 to 55 minute mark, then yeah, sign me up. That's gold, basically. Now, in the other episode this week, we kind of talked about Stefano briefly. Look, he's been really, really good. He's played four games so far. He's hitting an average of 64 points per game in base and base attack from roughly 58 minutes a game. But that's great areas, basically. If he can maintain that, I think it's hard to argue he's not going to be a genuine front row forward option. You know, maybe he's not going to be the elite two or three spots like the Payne Haases and Adam Fanua Blakes, because I just don't think he's quite got that upside. But who knows? Appy is a great hooker. Stefano's shown a bit of a nose for the line in the past. It could be a definite case where, you know, he might go on a little bit of an Adam Fanua Blake try scoring run at some point. And obviously, that would be a great reward for anyone who takes the risk there. So at 555K, 500, I think it's still a reasonable price to be going for someone who, you know, is showing a really, really good work rate so far. So yeah, I guess in that sense, let's look at Fanua Blake, who is, yeah, not quite on the same level in terms of base and base attack, but we know he's got attacking upside that is unmatched right now in the front row forward position, especially with no Tino around. His base and base attack, his PPM is about 1.06. So when he's hitting about 52 minutes a game, yeah, that's a decent work rate for him, roughly around the 55 to 56 mark, give or take. But again, you can't match that upside that he's currently got. In comparison, Payne Haas, probably the other end of the spectrum at the moment. I know we've only got two games, but like historically, he's been 60 to 65 minutes, and he's always going to be around that 1.1, give or take, base and base attack number. So yeah, he's basically hit 67 in his base and base attack from roughly 62 minutes a game. So that's your elite level. You know, I keep waiting for Payne to have that little bit of extra attack that he did, like when he first burst onto the scene. Like, some of the tries he scored were from 30, 40 meters away, where, you know, his size and his speed and his lateral movement was deceptively fast. And I think maybe just people are very switched on now and know he can do stuff like that. So they're obviously making sure they shut him down. And obviously the opportunities then for attack will be few and far between there. To finish this deep dive, I did want to briefly touch over to the second row position. When we're talking about base and base attack, there's only two names that really factor in at this stage, and it's Jermaine Hopgood and Cam McInnes, both you know, renowned workers, and Hopgood's got a little bit of an upside there attack wise as well. So Hopgood's played five games, averaging about 60 minutes a game, give or take, and he's averaging a massive 63.6 points per game in base and base attack. So, you know, to play 60 minutes a game and still hit more than 1 point per game in base and base attack is really, really good. So he's hitting roughly 1.06 as his base and base attack PPM there. So yeah, it just showcases obviously why Hopgood's a premium second row option at the moment. Now for Cam McInnes, he's such a hard worker in terms of tackles that anytime he gets big minutes and he gets to stay on the field and the Sharks don't have a lot of ball, he just racks up tackle numbers. So he has four games so far where he's averaged roughly 58 minutes a game. And in terms of his base and base attack numbers, it's roughly 63. Now, the biggest interesting thing here for McInnes is that of that 63 points per game, and about 60% of that scoring is all from his tackles. It's just he's such a defensive workhorse. That's not to say Hopgood or whatever is lazy defensively. He's still, you know, about 52, almost 53% of his base and base attack comes from his tackle work as well. But, you know, that's almost 8, 9, 10% difference in terms of his scoring. So it's quite significant. But yeah, I think that's enough nerdy stats diving for this week. So as always, get in touch with Carl. Tax time is getting closer and closer. Get Carl to do your tax return. He'll legally maximize your tax refund. Whether it's just a basic tax return or accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains on share trading, even crypto, Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. It doesn't matter where you are in Australia, Carl's able to help you out using FaceTime, Zoom, any sort of video conferencing software. He can help anyone, no matter where you are. And in fact, you know, even if you're in the next suburb, he may still not have met you because you do everything online. Or conversely, you might be on the other end of the world and he'd still be able to help you out. So definitely get in touch with Carl. And as always, he reminds us he's doing a special for Supercoach Champions podcast listeners. That's $99 for a basic tax return. Or even if you don't have a basic return to do, he'll look after you on price. And he wants to remind his usual clients to make sure you're in the Number Crunchers group. Get in touch with Carl for how to join. And you can take on likes of myself, Joe Fitz, Tim Moody, Matty White. All of us are in that group. And yeah, if you're at the top of the group at the end of the year, you'll win yourself either a free basic tax return or the equivalent of that. So yeah, check out Carl McGrath, accountant.
Look, man, I only need to know one thing.
Who the hell is this guy?
You and the chosen one!
You think I had a choice?
This is your captain speaking.
Alrighty, it's going to be another interesting round for captaincy. Look, jumping straight into it, starting off with the vice captaincy options. Like for a bunch of us, there's probably opportunities here to be able to loop, given the state of our teams, the teams on buys, things like that. But look, first game, you've got Kalen Ponga, standout option, obviously. I think the Knights will get up for this one. The Roosters are pretty smashed. Having said that, on the other end of the ledger, Joey Manu playing fullback is always an option. I couldn't fault either option here, especially it depends on your setup. Obviously, there are some more appealing fullback options later in the round that you might want to captain, so that's where you might go the VC on Joey Manu, or you might want to VC one of the other fullback options. For the next game, Ryan Pappenhausen up against the Bulldogs. I think it's he's a genuine option for sure. He's previously scored 193 against the Doggies in the past, obviously with goal kicking, but you know, take away the goal kicking, he's still hitting 150 plus if he gets those types of attacking stats there. The Doggies are quite depleted. This is the Storm playing at home. It's shaping up for a great Ryan Pappenhausen game, honestly. But you could, you know, segue that to Harry Grant, who has a ceiling. I mean, it's less likely, but he's hit 140 in the past. And also, I guess if you think Eli Katoa potentially goes over for a double or even a hat-trick, that could happen. And that's where, I guess, yeah, he could be a legitimate VC option as well. Outside of those games, I mean, you're getting to the Broncos and the Dolphins. Like, if you were patient with Rhys Walsh, then he's definitely a VC option there. I wouldn't put the straight C on him, but I guess Rhys's ownership would be pretty low at this point in time. And then you've got the likes of your Hammers. Like, I just don't think he's quite an option this week. The Broncos still pretty good defensively when they stay fit. Look, obviously, if they get hurt mid-game, then, you know, all bets are off the table, but especially missing the likes of Flegler and some other key players for the Dolphins. I think, yeah, give Hammer a swerve on this one. Then first game's on the Saturday. Obviously, Tommy Turbo, I think you can always consider him as an option. But playing in New Zealand, less appealing to me. On the Warriors side, you know, SJ's been in great form, but there's some injury chat there. So I think I would stay away from him, even though he's playing at home. But it's the next game where it gets really interesting. Obviously, Drinky, he's on fire. He's got a great record against the Eels. This is in Sydney, though, in CommBank, and I think that's sometimes where it's not as good for Drinkwater or just the Cowboys in general, but with the Eels the way they are, no Moses and injuries left, right, and centre, I definitely think, the Cowboys probably can go better against them. You know, looking at his last three scores, like I said on the other podcast, you know, 122, 117, and 113, 122, that was in Townsville. But the 117 before that was actually at Combank Stadium. So he's shown he's had the ability to go 110 plus at both grounds. So he's definitely in consideration there. Otherwise, I mean, it's hard to trust some of the other Cowboys. But Val, I don't think you can go wrong with that. At the end of the day, he's still a really, really you know, safe floor, high ceiling guy. If the Cowboys turn up, then he could easily have a 100 plus game again. The next game is going to be interesting though. So Nico Hines, obviously, you know, fresh off the bye, his best performance this year for Supercoach purposes was the game just before the bye. The Rabbitohs are a bit of a rabble, to put it lightly, and the Sharks, you know, they seem like they're slowly making better and better moves. So look, his history against the Rabbitohs isn't too bad, but I can't really compare it, because I think the Rabbitohs this year, they're just not the same Rabbitohs that they have been rolling out the last few seasons, right? So even then, Hines last starts 174-96. I feel like Hines is going to be a pretty safe bet if you do think the Sharks are going to comfortably account for the Rabbitohs. So I can't fault anyone for going there. Personally for me, VC Ponga, C Hines at the moment is where I'm leaning. Last few games, there are some smoky options as well. So Tigers and the Dragons, I think Lomax, the way he's playing at the moment, his work rate, all of the above, I think he warrants consideration for sure. On the Tigers side, I guess Appy, we know he's got some ceiling. I'm a little bit worried about the injury. Hopefully it's easing up for him, but he looked hampered last round and didn't play 80 minutes, obviously, and we've got Jake Simpkin on the bench again, so that is a little bit worrying to me. So I'd probably steer away from Appy, and there's not really any other Tigers I'd be interested in at this stage. So final game of the round, though, the Raiders and the Titans. I guess this is a tough one, because I think if Jordan Rapana was fit, he would definitely be in consideration for captaincy, the way he's been playing and scoring for Supercoach purposes. Look, you'd love the matchup. I just don't think you could trust any of them to confidently put the captaincy on them. I guess that's where, you know, if you want to go for the late round captain risky flyer, then pick a Raiders back and trust that they'll, you know, ton up against the Titans. The last thing I will say, Dave Fifita, if you're going to take a punt on him, I could easily see him scoring 100 plus against the Raiders. His last start against them was 107 points, and yeah, he's showing some pretty decent work rate. I mean, so far 57 and 55 minutes, and 81. Take away the line break and the line break assist, he's still sitting at 60 plus in base and base attack, with obviously Dave Fifita upside, which, you know, against anyone, he can bust the line. He could score a try by himself near the line. Yeah, I just think he's not a bad shout if you're going to take that punt. So, yeah, it's an interesting round for captaincy. I think I'm going to stick with, you know, your premium options here of Ponga, Hines, Pappenhausen, Drinkwater, Manu. These are the guys I'd be really looking at this week.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, so kind of bouncing off what I was talking about the other in the other podcast about how do we kind of look at our trade situation? Do we need to start saving? I guess part of this means, you know, we need to be a little bit more prudent about when we trade out cheapies, when we're cashing in and trying to upgrade guys. So one of the questions we got from the Discord this week was to look at, you know, what cheapies are ready to be culled. So I think that's a very pertinent one, because, yeah, let's just face it, I traded out Sam Hughes a week early instead of Ben Trbojevic, which is clearly a mistake. Look, that said, thankfully, Burbo still went pretty well and has, you know, made a little bit of cash back and should make a bit more this week. But yeah, I guess, you know, I wanted to talk about some of the more popular cheapy prospects. So Liam Henry, you know, big fan of how he's been going about his work, but this negative one really, really kills me. Obviously, he's made a fair bit of coin already, sitting at 337,200. Now, his next break even is going to be, you know, in the 55 to 60 range is my guess, depending on how the magic number shifts for the following round. But that means, you know, his next game is round 7. He's most likely, barring a trial or something like that, he's most likely going to drop a little bit in coin. And then his break-even will drop back a little bit lower after that. So, you know, he might drop, you know, 20, 30,000, but then he could start going up again afterwards. The problem for me, though, is, you know, how long are you happy to wait for this? Some of us need the cash now or whatever. So this is where I'm thinking, look, round 7, he'll drop in cash. Round 8, he might go back a bit. Round 9, round 10. for him to get back to where he is now is probably going to be around 9 or around 10 at the earliest. And then if he keeps averaging, say, a 40, 45 average even, he might eventually get to 400K by about round 13 at the earliest. So I guess that's the question of, you know, are you willing to be patient? And if so, like, are you going to be okay to wait until round 13? Because, look, the Panthers do play round 13, and maybe you can hold Liam Henry all the way there. So that's legitimately an option. But, you know, that's another 6-7 rounds for maybe only another 50, 60, 70K at most. So I could certainly get around someone just trading him out this week. In fact, I'm really considering trading him to Elise Kitoa, basically. So that's where I'm at the moment because, yeah, it just makes sense for me to do that. I want to get Josh Curran up to front row forward. And, yeah, that's kind of how I'm rolling at the moment. So I guess that's where, you know, Liam Henry sits for me. So to go to the other end, I mean, looking at someone like a Jack Bostock and Jesse Arthurs, those center wing guys who, you know, they do have a decent score in the rolling average for a little bit longer. But let's face it, they are very reliant on attacking stats. I think, you know, no one is looking at Arthurs or Bostock as base stat beasts who are going to keep going. I mean, Bostock sitting at 62 average but scoring a heap of tries, and Arthurs at a 52-53 average, but again, you know, off some significant attacking stats, making up a chunk of his scores. I do think as soon as they peak, you probably want to move off them. Like Arthurs, I'm going to hold him for a little bit longer, but the moment he doesn't have a nice, you know, lowish break even, like by something around 40 or below, is the moment I'm probably going to sell him off to someone else. Now, you know, this is a decent matchup for him, I think, with all the injuries for the Dolphins. And then the Raiders could be tough. The Tigers may or may not be tough. I'm still a little bit on the fence on that. The Roosters probably will be tough. Then the Eels, I mean, they might be healthier by then. They might have fixed some of the outside back issues. They could be easy or tough. And then you're getting to round 11, around 12. So Seagulls, that's going to be at Magic Round. And then the Titans in round 12. So there's a world where Jesse Arthurs could be a good hold until round 12, and you might want to play him that round. But I could easily see if he doesn't go well the next 2 weeks, then by round 8 or 9, you want to move on that front. Similarly for Bostock, I think, you know, a lot of what happens this week will probably determine what I do with him. Like if he does have a decent, you know, 50-60 score again, you probably can survive holding him through a few more rounds. The Eels currently, I think, are not a tough matchup. I think there could be at least one try for Bostock on offer next week as well. So that'll keep his price ticking along, or at least, you know, kind of flatlining a little bit, but maintaining value. And then the Knights is a bit of a tough one, I think. I'm still unsure whether I class them as a good or bad matchup yet. They are looking better each week, but they do have a lot of moving parts due to injuries and coaching decisions. Then the Cowboys and the Seagulls, and then the Tigers at Magic Round, and then the Warriors, and then they play the round 13 bye against the Raiders. So I tend to think I'm more likely to part with Bostock over the next few weeks. It really depends on how he scores the next 1 or 2 weeks. So yeah, while he's got a nice lowish break even, happy to just let him there and play him on the right matchup. So this week I will be playing him. But yeah, longer term, he doesn't have a great work rate, so going to be shipping him off sooner rather than later. Now, Ben Trbojevic, obviously with the news that Schuster is not going to be around or basically won't get a look in at first grade, I think his job security is safe, but he's not playing 80 minutes very often, which is an issue for me. Now, he does have the Titans next week, so I don't want to part with Burbo in that regard. I'm trying not to play him because I don't want to play him at the centers against the Warriors, who are definitely one of the better matchups at the moment. Tougher matchups at the moment. They are quite good defensively. But at the same time, you know, he is going to benefit a lot from if he plays right center, obviously, you know, running off Cherry Evans and Olakuatu, and then obviously Tommy Turbo doing whatever he wants to do when he's fit and firing is always a good thing there. But yeah, Titans round 7. Once I see what happens there, that'll kind of determine what I do next. But the run leading up to the bye, and they don't play around 13, so I can see myself parting with Burbo sometime, you know, around rounds 8, 9, 10, 11, somewhere around there, if not sooner, just depending on how poorly he scores the next 2 weeks. But I guess just generally speaking, if you're looking at your back you know, outside backs, you just really need to look at their base and base attack. If they're low, then, you know, as soon as they're cashing in on attacking stats, like, you just want to wait till they hit that spike week, and then 2 weeks later, once that big spike week rolls out of their average, you got to move them on before they start losing their value. Obviously, looking at the draw is important to determine there might be bigger scores on the horizon as well, but it's a fine balance between, you know, getting impatient and giving up on them before they finally hit their big spike week. For example, some people sold Strange before his 96 last week, so he's going to skyrocket in price. But, you know, his base and base attack is not so bad, and he's improving on the field, so I think that's where you are needing to watch the games and see if he's improving and doing better on the field. So I think there's going to be some bigger scores ahead for Strange. But yeah, I'm not sure what other guidance I can really offer on the cheapy front at the moment. So yeah, if you have any more specific questions, hit me up in the Discord. But yeah, hopefully that general guide kind of helps a little bit. The other big question I wanted to look at was more, you know, how do we pick the guys that we're going to chase after, and what's the timing on jumping on them? I'll be honest, I have been frustrated because, you know, I have a time that I want to jump on certain players, but because of injuries holding me back, I haven't been able to. I definitely feel like for the past 3 weeks, I've been like one set of trades behind where I want to be because I was forced to deal with some other injuries. So that's been frustrating for me. But, you know, like picking the guys, going big, like I haven't been too bad at that. You know, like most recent example was Elias Katoa. You know, I really wanted him last week, but I couldn't because I had to, I feel like, go with Pierce Paul, who I really wanted the week before, and unfortunately because of injuries, I couldn't get him yet, so on and so forth. But that's enough about my team. I think, you know, a lot of Supercoach players just wait for the big blow-up game, and then they jump on afterwards when the negative break-even is there or low break-even, and, you know, they kind of wait to see the first validation of that big blow-up game to justify, yes, this guy that I've been having my eye on, wanting to bring in, is someone I want to bring in now. And that's not so bad. Like, that's fine. But sometimes to get the edge, you need to jump early, right? And look, it could be really simple, but yeah, you got to watch the footy. The more you watch, the more you can see the players who look really good but just haven't had that breakout yet. If anyone had been watching Katoa, they would have seen he definitely looked really good out the gate, and yeah, that he just hadn't had the big score yet to blow up. And that's where, especially when you mix in a bye where people are a little bit forgotten for a bit, that's where it would have been a real opportunity to jump on, and hence why I was so keen, but just didn't work out. But yeah, you just got to sometimes just pick the players that are kind of slowly building up and you're seeing positive signs from them and the numbers are matching up as well. For me, it's that kind of perfect storm of, yeah, firstly the eye test and then double checking their figures and their numbers. Like Katoa's base and base attack was very, very good. And yeah, then figuring out I just need to find the right time to jump on. It is hard to properly explain kind of the methodology, but like maybe if I can throw some names out as examples. So Selwyn Cobbo is a guy I've had my eye on for a little bit. And, you know, first few rounds, great base and base attack, passing the eye test, you know, new position and all. So there was a bit of hesitation there. Now, round three against the Panthers, I think was understandable that his work rate would drop. His base and base attack did drop then. And then obviously Reece Walsh injured as well. And that coincided with a game where he didn't really get much opportunity to touch the ball against the Cowboys. So that's his season low score of 24. The base attack, you know, 29, and then it went back up this week with the 39, scored 47. This is still against the Storm. So for me, looking at these numbers, I'm like, they're still quite promising. He's definitely passing the eye test. And Reece Walsh is back. The draw, like this round is a great round. You know, I've talked about the Broncos draw. It's not bad moving forward and culminates in a round 12 matchup against the Titans. Like someone like this really appeals to me because he's obviously had a low score, so a lot of people out of mind, out of sight, but the potential's there. I can feel like 100 is going to come in the next three rounds is my guess for Cobbo, especially if Walsh is there. So that's like one example of someone I've kind of, you know, penciled in as an option. I just can't do it this round, obviously, and there's a chance I may not be able to just because it doesn't fit my team structure, my team needs. But yeah, that's an example of why I've come to, you know, my current conclusion that Cobbo is a good option and someone to really think about targeting. Now to maybe look at it another way, someone who's, you know, a little bit off the radar just because he's been suspended for a bit and his last start scored 25, but he got sin-binned and it was just a horrible game for the Sharks, but it's Britton Nicora. We saw last year he really had his breakout. His first round wasn't too bad, you know, scored 53 in base attack. showcase that he is potentially still going to be very relevant. A lot of it's going to hang on, you know, how the Sharks go generally, but he's the main edge back roller there. He's on Nicho Hynes' side. He's going to be off the radar for a lot of people. And, you know, we know he's no risk of origin. The Sharks do cover round 13 and also round 19. So for me, I'm definitely eyeing off Nikora. It's not going to be this week because obviously, you know, as much as the matchup is great, I think he's going to drop some cash and Katoa's the clear better buy. But, you know, I'm definitely going to be watching here. He's going to have a, you know, half, I don't know, 50-50 game against the Cowboys and then the Raiders. But then round 9 against the Dragons, I definitely can see myself interested there. So this is perhaps the earlier kind of, you know, earmarking guys like this for a pod and wanting to look at how he looks on the field next few weeks and also how the Sharks look and also keeping an eye on the numbers. But I definitely want to see him hitting in the 55 to 60 mark in base attack, which was a lot of what he did last year. And if he's going to keep doing that, I back the upside for him to finish, you know, potentially as a top five second rower and with some nice games and nice buy schedule there as well. And the Sharks do have a nice run home as well, which is really important also for, you know, for head-to-head purposes. But yeah, that's kind of my thought process, I guess, is another example of someone who I am looking at but haven't quite jumped on and won't jump on just yet. But, you know, the timing is going to be really interesting for someone like a Nikora if he is going to be presenting as a definite trade-in soon. And the last player I will talk about is, I guess, someone on the other end of the spectrum, like Dave Fifita, right? He is clearly a premium. We know how good he is. He has shown so far his numbers-wise. He's pretty much back. He hasn't looked as explosive as he would be, but that's understandable. He's been out for a long time with injury, and he's probably building up. But you can kind of feel it bubbling away, and an explosion, I think, is on its way. Now, the Titans do have a bit of a mixed draw, and plus they're the Titans, but yeah, I mean, the Raiders, the Seagulls, the Warriors, the Storm, and then Cowboys, Knights, Broncos in round 12, and then the round 13 bye, and then obviously Fifita's got a pretty rough origin schedule usually anyway. So the thing with Fifita is he's not that matchup dependent, right? He just does what he wants, and he's got great base and base attack. He's going to be the focal point, I think, of anything good that comes from the Titans. It's going to come through Fifita, maybe Campbell, but I just think he's going to be leaned on. So something like that, you know, a premium gun who's been out of sight, out of mind, coming back from injury, come off the bench. Like, there's not that much chat about him, and understandably so, because I think, you know, I would not be getting him ahead of Katoa this round. But, like, if I already had Katoa, like, I'd be loving to jump on Fifita before he has his big blow-up game. I mean, he scored 81 in his second game. He's got a break-even of 112. Yes, he's over 800K, but he's only in 1,760 Supercoach teams. Can you imagine Dave Fifita being in that little teams last year? And that's pretty much what you've got here. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Fifita rewards the risk-takers who jump on this week or next week even. Yeah, I can certainly see it happening. Anyway, I think we'll finish up here for this week. Good luck to everyone for their choices at this stage. Two trades just for me. Dom Young out, Liam Henry out, going to Eliezer Katoa and James Schiller. So not using my fourth boost at this stage, although I'm, you know, I'm a sucker. I'm very tempted to still pull that trigger and bring in Marshall King for Lussick. But yeah, I'll try, wait, and be patient on that. But yeah, those are my trades. Again, VC Ponga for this evening's game, Captain Hynes if that doesn't work out. And yeah, good luck everyone. It's been a brutal start to the season, but yeah, I think we're seeing even with the league rankings, with the you know, season super coaches are starting to slowly creep up the rankings there. So I think normality will return soon enough. But yeah, all right, catch you guys next week.